if you're a new SDR, it really depends on your ability to divide time and energy and what you're comfortable with, and whether you want to dedicate more effort now for a substantial income, or if you want to just, you know, enjoy, you know, getting off at five and, you know, spending plenty of time to, you know, bask in the sun, right? So it's I'm not saying that's necessarily the exact perfect trade-off either, but I realize this is my time to really, really grind and to prove something.
Hi, I'm Mark Gagne.
And I'm Chris Corcoran, and you're listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Tech Sales for Hustlers is a podcast where we catch up with Memory Blue alums and reminisce about their start in high-tech sales with us.
Let's go get some, Corcoran.
Gagne, you know I'm ready.
Oh, Chris, the number one SDR of all time is with us today, right? And his career has just started. So, Dang Fua in the house.
It's a pleasure to be here, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
So, Dang, Cy Young, 749 complete games. Wilt Chamberlain, 50.4 points per game. Boston Celtics, 8 straight NBA titles. Cal Ripken Jr., 2,632 consecutive games played. Dang Fua, 47 paper meeting leads occurred September 2021. All those things have one thing in common: records that will never be broken.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. Thank you.
It was incredible to watch. 47
yes.
leads on a goal of 7.
Yep.
47.
No one's ever going to do that.
You know, it was...
Dang, we've been doing this for 2002.
Yeah.
And no one ever did that.
Yep.
And
yep.
No one's coming close.
And hold on. Like, when did you start?
September 2019.
So, yeah. Almost 20 years in.
Jesus.
You set the record. We're not going to... We'll wait another 20 years. It's not going to happen again.
Mm. Right? Yeah. Unbelievable.
Thank you.
Is Wilt Chamberlain there or no?
Yeah. I said Wilt Chamberlain.
Wilt the Stilt. Okay.
Yeah. Wilt Chamberlain. 50.4 points. He averaged 50.4 points a game.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we're just going to let that sit for a second.
And then we got to talk all about your background.
Sure.
Your levels of success, your risk appetite, your crazy work ethic and work intensity.
Sure.
And then what you're doing now.
Sure.
And where you want to go.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So let's get into it. This will be for Chris and Mark, but also for the people listening.
Absolutely.
People want to listen because they're going to want to know.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Growing up, what you like as a kid, that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah. So I think I want to start a little bit on my grandfather. I think he's one of my biggest influences. He's on my mother's side. So my mother's father. He taught me everything I know about art. And he instilled a deep passion for, you know, creativity and observing details and organizing things in a conceptual manner. So from there, I kind of realized I was a little bit of an artist. I had, you know, creative tendencies. Moving forward,
young? So was your grandfather around when you were growing up?
Yeah, he was.
Same house or live in the same town or what?
So my family and I, we would go back to China every other summer. So this was ever since I was a little kid.
Where were you born?
I was born in D.C.
Washington, D.C. proper.
That's right. Washington, D.C. proper. Yep.
Okay. And then so growing up, you see your grandfather every other summer.
In Shenzhen. Okay. Yes, that's right. So he would give me all these artistic lessons. But my point being, you know, he instilled, you know, various very imperative principles in me and respect for the craft. And, you know, moving forward, my mother, she inspired me to pick up the violin. She would take me to violin lessons, and I picked that up as well. So I was able to develop an appreciation for the finer arts. But in this process, I also discovered that I was very extroverted because I would take these tendencies and I would try to communicate them with everybody around me. I was very excited about this. So I also discovered I was quite extroverted. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I didn't do the best in high school. I was getting, you know, A's, B's, but I was in straight A's. But, you know, I went to college. I wasn't exactly sure.
So in high school, let's just like the slow jam part of the stuff. So in high school, were you the arts and the music? Did you have a job? Did you play sports? Was it a little bit of both? Like what did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
Absolutely.
What were you doing with your time out of school? Or were you academic? Like
So I was definitely more on the arts side. I took the AP arts class. I was in the school orchestra.
Yep.
Shout out Mr. Riley, Mr. Brown. Those gentlemen inspired me deeply.
What school is this?
This is Woodrow Wilson.
Okay.
In Tenleytown, in D.C. Okay. Yeah. So Mr. Riley was my conductor. Mr. Leonard Brown would come to our class and give us guidance and teach us how to play our instruments even better. Tremendous. Very, very intelligent gentleman. But so, yeah, I was very deeply entrenched in the musical and artistic field there.
The public school system of Washington, D.C.
That's right. Nice. Wilson. Love yeah. So my first year, they had just put $100 million into the renovation of Wilson. So it was a fresh building. You know, they hired a bunch of new staff. And yeah, so
And what do you think you're going to be when you're in high school? What do you think you're going to do when you grow up?
You know, I grew up in a household where there was a bit of emphasis on, you know, pursuing, you know, traditionally, you know, financially equipped careers, right? Being in medicine, being in law, being in business. But art was obviously the backbone of our innate DNA. So a bit of everything was considered. But so, yeah, going into college, I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, whether to pursue art or, you know, pursue something a little bit financially, you know, tangible.
Yep.
Started with communications. I was in the honors dorm. And around me, everybody was honors. They were in STEM.
In college?
Yes, in college.
And what college did you go to?
University of Delaware.
Okay.
Yeah. So I will admit that I was actually quite a bit peer pressured because everybody, they would ask me, what are you going to do with a communications degree? And everybody was saying either engineering or chemistry or biology, et cetera. And because I didn't understand, you know, what you could do with a liberal arts degree at the time, right? I bought the narrative that the only way to make a living was to pursue something in STEM, or even politics for that matter. So I picked up a minor in political science and then quit communications and started biology. Mm-hmm. So I would volunteer.
Because you didn't think you could, with a liberal arts degree, you could make money.
That's exactly it.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, that's, I know family members or family friends who were thriving in business who I could really communicate or, you know, understand from. And I consulted a few people, but I decided to pursue biology. Near the end of that, my 4 years, I realized it was not something that I wanted to continue to do. I would go to, you know, hospitals and volunteer every week and, you know, do little science experiments and stuff. But it was something that you have to, it's a field where you have to face mortality consistently, right? Yeah. So, and that was a little tough for me to reconcile with.
A lot.
Yeah, it's quite a lot. So, but, you know, near the spring semester of senior year, my roommates, everybody was applying for jobs. And I thought, okay, I got to get on top of this. So I went to Handshake, which is one of those, those websites on, you know, the college system where you apply for jobs. And I was quickly applying to all the jobs that I could see. And I saw Memory Blue and I sent out the application and I got a call. And it wasn't Libby. It was another girl from California. I don't think she's with us anymore at the company, at least. I can't remember her name, but she put me in connection with Libby.
Libby.
Yes, that's right. But it was Memory Blue was the second company that offered me a position.
Okay.
And I realized it was close to home, about an hour commute if you take the train. So I decided, why not move home, you know, save a little bit of money and give sales a shot, right? Going back to my original observation of myself that I was rather extroverted. I thought maybe I could do well in this business.
Yep.
It was a leap of faith, right? Obviously, you know, diverting from the path of STEM. But I took it. And Nick Perry at the time.
Nick Perry.
That's right. Nick and I, you know, we had a great conversation. He recognized my biology background and he had the perfect campaign for me at the time, which was MHK. I'm not sure if they're still with us as well, but they're within the medical compliance space, you know, care management. So he put me on that. It was a great start. And I guess I want to pause there and kind of, you know, does that kind of give you a sort of better understanding of where I came from, my background?
Well, tell me.
Yeah.
When did the sales thing come up? How did sales?
Yeah. So sales, you know, it really wasn't something I ever planned for.
Yeah.
So I would say that I kind of went into it a little empty handed in terms of my exposure. I had worked a couple restaurant jobs. I should mention that. So that gave me plenty of experience, you know, interacting with people in the flesh. And I did a really good job of that. I was able to, you know, make some good tips, right? You know, being good with people, et cetera. So I figured with that amount of experience, and I also knew about the amazing training at Memory Blue, obviously. So that was assured. I knew I was going to be taken care of in that. But with that background, I was pretty confident that I would be able to talk to people, right? So yeah, to answer your question, it was never something I planned for. It kind of just happened. I was applying for jobs. Memory Blue gave me an offer.
Yep.
I decided to give it a shot.
And did you know anyone in tech sales?
Not a single soul.
Not a single soul.
Nope.
And you interviewed with Swaggy P.
That's right.
And got into the business.
That's right.
And what did you think you were signing up for?
You know, I understood that. Well, Libby made a really good case for this, right? She sold me on the vision of being in tech. Now, basically what she told me was that there's this whole industry that I never really gave thought of, because I mean, I thought of software as individual organizations, right? Not as a field that you could go into or more or less break into with the avenue of sales.
Yep.
Right. I thought that you have to be specialized in, you know, coding or software
people
development.
People only think of technology typically, even to this day and a lot of places.
That's right.
Engineering.
Yep.
We got to be in a software engineer to get into the technology.
You need a computer science degree or something.
Get into tech.
Yep.
So she opened up your eyes, and she's very good at that. Opening up your eyes into the promise of the industry.
100%. That's right.
And then it kind of awakens, like, okay, there's like a sit. So then you got it. But what did you think the job was? Most people don't know. You didn't know what you were doing exactly.
Yeah, no. So I honestly didn't even know what the full job entailed until I had a meeting with Colin Cunningham, who was my mentor.
Never lost a client.
Yeah.
DM.
He was great.
Cunningham.
Yeah. Cunningham was great. He taught me a lot about the day-to-day, right? What I was actually going to be doing, you know, sourcing specific accounts relevant to the campaign, et cetera. And I thought I was just going to be dialing from a list that they were going to send us over, and that was it, right? But it was obviously a lot more than that, right? So, but yeah, he illuminated me on the day-to-day, how to prospect, how to use Zoom Info, how to use LinkedIn. And that's how I got started.
So, and then you never had a sales job before,
which
like most people envy. And talk to us about getting on the phones.
Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, I think the majority of people who haven't cold called before usually enter the field with a little bit of anxiety, right? So that was me. I definitely...
Everyone.
Yeah.
I think everyone. That's a natural...
Yeah. That's right. So, you know, me and Nick Perry, we did a couple role plays and I completely botched it up many times. And from there, I was a little bit nervous. I wasn't exactly sure if I was going to be able to do the job well, because he came at me with different objections and would challenge me and wouldn't give me the meeting, right, as the prospect. So I had to learn specifically how to deal and navigate and conceptualize through my wording how to go around certain objections. And he was able to really help me with that in detail. But he was able to basically break it down into the basic BANT, you know, categorization. And once you kind of have those four pillars, you know, understood and fully memorized, you can definitely spin those off and address each of those concerns on the fly as much as you can. So
what was it like getting on the phone for the first time? So we're past, you started about the role plays with Nick.
Yep.
And like, and so then here we are, we're unleashing you on the phones.
Yep.
What was that like?
So
at this point, you're no different than any SDR before all time great status arises. Like, right. It's not an easy thing to do.
No.
There is the anxiety, right? And cognitive dissonance that comes with the role.
Right.
And you kind of got to do it. And we give you a framework to kind of learn how to do it. And then we say, go.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you win. What was that like?
Yeah.
What do you remember from the very early days?
Absolutely. So me and Nick, we sat down and we prepared the sheet music, right? Specifically for MHK. You know, the first week, I think I would only read from the script. And I found that there were, you know, certain hiccups in the flow of the conversation, right? So I had to kind of sort of make adjustments on how to respond accordingly, because it was never going to be directly, you know, from the paper, right? Based on how people respond.
Right.
That was very interesting. And so then it hit me that this isn't as technical as, for example, coding, right? It's not binary. It's certainly not, right? So it forces you to improvise and to think on your feet like nothing else, really. And just to go off a tangent, I mean, these days, I think that to enhance your ability on the phone, one should practice, you know, what they can when it comes to the improvisation, and they should read as much as they can to better understand how to articulate themselves, right? But to go back to it, yeah, so I realized, you know, the sheet music wasn't exactly the most effective, and I had to basically be able to talk about the product efficiently in a digestible manner without sounding too monotonous or boring, but it had to be to the point and persuasive. So these common themes kept on appearing, and I would dial in on the most frequent objections I would hear. And I think that by the end of the month, I had a pretty good grasp on how to deal with at least MHK. So, but yeah, moving forward, I think that was the next 8 months, 9 months, where I was working purely on MHK before, you know, Chris had the brilliant idea of doubling down a little bit more on the PPM aspect. And by the way, yeah, so I was Christian Magorian, by the way. Shout out to Christian.
Christian.
He was like a big brother to me. We were on the same team. He and Dan Guyton as well. They were super, super, super helpful. And they also told me about the PPM situation, right, where you can make a little extra money, you know, working on these other campaigns after you hit your number for your primary campaign. So obviously I was, you know, very, very money motivated. So
Why are you so money motivated?
Well, for all the obvious reasons, but because of the...
Well, not obvious to everyone.
Sure. I would argue primarily because of the financial freedom. I have a lot to prove, not only to myself, but to my family. I should say that my family, we hold ourselves to a very high standard. We're very honorable people, and we come from a culture where, you know, it's important to, you know, discipline yourself as much as you can and to, you know, work your hardest, right? But, you know, this actually reminds me of one of the interview questions I had moving forward when I talked to Tommy at one point. This was when I was Tommy Gassman. That's right. Yeah. Shout out to Tommy. Very, very smart guy. He asked me, do I hate to lose more or do I love to win more? And I think that I said I actually hate to lose more, but I've actually given that question a little bit more thought these days. But it's a really, really good question because it's the same end goal, right? But it really frames the way that you look at things. And so when I answered the question, my mindset at the time was I refused to lose, right? So that's not an option, right? So that to me stood out more than winning because winning was a given, yeah. Right? So... But losing is still, you know, it's something that you have to work hard not to fail yourself, right? So, but yeah, going back to the PPM aspect, I was definitely hungry, right? So I had a lot to prove to myself because this was a field that nobody that I knew, none of my friends, anyone was dabbling in, right? Mm-hmm. So I, you know, people had their doubts about me entering this role as well. And so I had to prove them wrong, right? So I was able to secure a couple PPMs.
Why did you have to prove them wrong?
Why did I have to prove them wrong? That's a good question. Who's well, you know, I really believe that it's important to justify yourself in anything that you do, mm-hmm. right? It's your word, right? I mean, a man has his word, and I came into it. I refused to fail, and I wanted to show them also the possibilities of this exciting new field I was entering because I was beginning to see the potential, right? Nobody else in my circle understood that.
Yeah.
Everybody was committed to a traditional, you know, pathway, yeah. right? So there was that. I had a chip on my shoulder about that for
okay.
sure.
Okay. Okay. I see. I can see that.
Absolutely.
I have a little of that too, actually, but not to your extent, but like getting into sales. People are like, nobody thinks little Chris Corcoran Jr. is going to grow up and go into sales, right? That's not what, and then, you know, from traditional.
Of course. Too, of right? course.
What do you mean you're in sales?
Memory Blue alumni. Are you looking for your next top-performing SDR with the competitive drive, hustle mentality, and passion for sales that you can bank on? The Rising Stars program connects accomplished Memory Blue SDRs with alumni looking to expand their teams. Rising Stars have completed their SDR journey with us and are chomping at the bit to land a new and exciting high-tech sales opportunity. They've been professionally trained, coached, and mentored, thriving in the very environment where you launched your career. Alumni like you hire Memory Blue Rising Stars because they can rest easy knowing they're hiring the best in the business. Learn how you can access this unique pool of sales talent by heading to memoryblue.com/alumni.
Yeah, dang. Exactly. Right. There's that negative connotation sometimes, right? People think of sales, they think of a sleazy car salesman, right? Right. There's that association, but it is so much more than that. And it's not even funny. It's really ridiculous. I mean, when I came into it, obviously I had some reservations of my own, but you know, to fast forward, I think I should say that it is such an intellectually stimulating field to be a part of. And I think that some people think that it's anybody can do the job. And that is so far from the case. And but anyways, yeah. So going back to the story. So Chris, you know, Chris came up with the idea of doubling down on the PPM side of business. He reached out to a couple of the top performers at the time, myself, Nate, and Buddy. Nathan Kalem. Buddy, yes, Buddy Kalem. And, you know, and then Chris gave a fantastic presentation on the vision of the PPM team and really, really sold the idea of the possibility of making quite a lot of money, right? I think you referenced another firm that you had, you know, spoken with, and their top SDR was making well over 100K, I believe. Yeah. I think you use that as an example of what we could do. And at the time, obviously, there was a little bit of risk associated. This was also near the beginning, or I think a couple months into COVID, and everything was in the air, right? We weren't sure what was happening at all, but there's never a perfect time to take a risk, right? So I thought I was young, you know, let's give it a shot. Let's take the low salary, but with the high variable and go from there. And Max Haar was also in the picture. Yeah.
And let's talk about the risk real quick.
Yes, of course.
So the risk is the downside.
Yes.
Like not making a lot of money.
Of course.
Right? But the upside is you can make a lot more money than
absolutely
than you could if you weren't willing to accept the downside risk.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
So some people are comfortable with that.
Yes.
Well, why are you so comfortable with the downside risk?
You know, it's because I'm just very, very sure of myself. I think that from the evidence of how well I did on MHK, and when I realized that, you know, a lot of these campaigns, you know, a lot of people I talk to who work various campaigns, they want to say, okay, well, cyber is particularly hard for this reason, or, you know, fintech is hard for this reason, et cetera, et cetera. I think they focus too much on the complexity of the actual product versus what you're actually doing on the day-to-day, right? Which is simply securing enough interest and enough of a vision where the prospect wants to, you know, spend a couple minutes of their time to learn more. And obviously we want to provide the best for our clients in terms of a sales qualified meeting, right? So the work that we do to secure that comes from the back end on researching the right person, right? But at the end of the day, the verbiage is more or less within the same confines of structure, right? So, I mean, the ask is always the same. Mm-hmm. You're asking for a couple minutes to prove to them that what we think we have is going to be useful for their environment. And that's it. Right. It doesn't matter what you're selling.
Yeah.
So when I realized that, I was confident in Chris's proposition. And okay. I said, hell yeah. I mean, there's so much variety that we have already. And when I knew that I was going to have access to sell such a different plethora of technology, I mean, two things excited me, right? The fact that I could learn tremendously in being conversational about different products, and also the lucrative potential, right, of betting on myself.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so just for some of the listeners may already know this, but many may not. So what was going on here was Deng was an SDR, and a traditional SDR is assigned either full-time on one client or half-time on one client, half-time on another client. So we asked him to leave that setup to go and work where it's just 100% eat what you kill. You just have baskets of clients that want to have leads. And the original environment was he had kind of a salary or a salary equivalent and an opportunity to make some money above that. And the salary at that time was probably like 60 grand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we said, hey, Deng, turn in that salary for 60 grand. Exchange it for a salary of 24 grand, but you can make an unlimited amount of money if you do well. And to your point, I said, you know, you can make 100 grand or even more. It's totally uncapped.
Well, yeah.
And most people, and by the way, that second setup that we were asking Deng to go to, the clients provide very little resources other than go get us leads. And that's it. So he would be leaving a well-resourced, confined, structured environment with a higher salary to a unstructured, undefined, low resources, eat what you kill, unlimited environment. And most people don't want to do that. But for whatever reason, Deng was attracted to that.
And the key is, in that other environment, you're constrained by the time.
Yeah.
Right? You're constrained by, we're getting paid a fixed amount over this right. amount of time. We can only, therefore, afford to pay you up to Y.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
In this other model, we can afford to pay you whatever you think you can make.
Exactly.
Like literally.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
That's kind of up to you. It's the epitome of unlimited refills.
Yep. Yep.
with some risk.
So you found that attractive?
I found that very attractive. And me and Buddy, we had several conversations on the validity of this proposition. And we both agreed that, you know, this now is the time to shoot our shot and to give it a run, right? And it was, we both jumped in together. Me and Nathan, we were the first people on the PPM team, Max Haar being our manager. And I think my first client was Rapid7. And I was excited to be on cyber. But That just opened my eyes to so much possibility. And I knew the creative freedom, the way to sell individually all of these clients were in my hands. And that set forth, you know, I think the next 2 years pursuing PPM from there on out.
So tell us the process behind these months. I mean, what were some of your months, some of your production months?
Mm-hmm.
What were they?
It was always in the 30s.
Yep.
And just for purposes of comparison, the average is like 8.
Yeah.
Per SDR. And Dang was always in the 30s.
And everyone's coming after Dang every month. I mean, there's people you're friendly with.
Yeah.
Strong people who are like, all I want to do this month is this takedown Dang.
Mm.
Sarah, right? Mm. Sarah, because Gerard,
yeah.
And Gerard, she was like, I just want to beat Dang this month. That's all. That was like, how's it going? Yeah, you know, like,
I'm
a newbie SDR listening to this podcast.
Sure.
And that, you know, I'm listening to this podcast because Chris and Mark interviewed this gentleman who was the number one SDR of all time. Just fundamentally, what goes into that?
Right. Well, so, you know, the number 30, where did that come from? I think 30, I think it started from a goal of hitting 20. I think that me and Nate's goal together was to be able to earn a 10K collective paycheck, right? That's how we started out. For the month. Yes. That was the goal. And so we hit that goal. We were able to hit that goal both. I think Nate beat me to it, and we hit it together. And then we set our goals even higher. Then it became more so, you know, let's get 20, let's get 25. And then 30 became viable. And then I realized, okay, so 30 is my personal quota. I have to keep 30 consistently or it's over, right? So that I held myself accountable on 30 as the number to shoot for. But to answer your question, Mark, I think that especially if you're a new SDR, it really depends on your ability to divide time and energy and what you're comfortable with and whether you want to dedicate more effort now for a substantial income, or if you want to just, you know, enjoy, you know, getting off at 5 and, you know, spending plenty of time to, you know, bask in the sun, right? So it's, I'm not saying that's necessarily the exact perfect trade-off either, but I realized this was my time to really, really grind and to prove something, mm-hmm. right? So
yep.
I also knew that my reputation was on the line. I knew that once I started getting attention as a top performer, that it's kind of like King of the Hill, right? So every month is a new month and you have to instantiate that. And to keep that title is almost more difficult than trying to beat it, because if you don't beat it, it's fine, right?
Yeah.
You get a pat on the back, you try again. But to consistently hold that title, that was my goal.
King right? of the Hill.
Yeah,
right? I played that game.
Yeah, so then you obviously worked long, but I want to just talk about how hard you worked in that time. So for the audience, and a normal SDR will make 100 dials a day and maybe get into five conversations.
Right.
Right. And that, and a lot of people think that's crazy high.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right.
Most of our clients,
like, you can say 100. Wow.
Yep.
So Dang, share with the listeners kind of a day in the life in terms of your activity, because you would just go ham.
Absolutely. I think 100 dials right now is on the low end, right? I mean, it's, I know that was the desired number of dials for every SDR entering the business, right? Everybody was a little daunted by that number at first, but truly, if you sit down and you dial for a couple hours, that it goes by really quickly. Yeah. I don't think it's actually that much of a commitment. You just have to sit down and not be distracted and focus.
Yeah.
I really don't believe it's that much to ask for, frankly. And I think it beats, I mean, this is where I think I get my personal strategy starts, you know, becoming a little bit more subjective, right? So I'm not the biggest fan of writing long-winded, you know, emails. I know they're effective, right? We talked a lot about the trainings and, you know, what a rifle shot looks like, how you can get super, super specific and, you know, address all the, you know, the details and et cetera of a particular prospect. I think that's great. But I think if we're going to talk about pure efficiency, I know that on the phones, when you get somebody on the line, that is infinitely, for me, more effective. I know that I get into more conversations. I also know I have more impact because this is where the whole art of cold calling becomes a real thing.
Sales.
Of sales. Yeah, yeah. Of sales in general.
Talking to people is how you get better at selling.
Absolutely. And in an environment where we live in today where things are getting quickly automated, right? Both of you are familiar with ChatGPT, ChatGPT-4, all of these AI technologies that are, you know, literally automating LinkedIn sequences and email sequences. This is happening now.
Yeah.
Right. And people were doing that en masse as it was while I was there. But now we're entering a new revolution, right? So, but to my understanding is that AI's hardest time to represent as a live human figure is that sort of reaction time and that, you know, improvisation and the creativity of what a human actually embodies, right? That's going to be the hardest thing to code.
Yep.
Because AI is binary fundamentally. So if we want to challenge that, the medium to do so would be to really double down on the cold calling aspect.
Correct. I believe,
right? And you know, to sing Memory Blue's praises is that, you know, we really appreciate cold calling. We put so much emphasis on the call breakdowns, on how to, you know, read the prospects, how to deal with specific objections fluidly, right? You cannot do that on an email chain unless you want to spend weeks at it, right? Back and forth playing email tag. That's, and that works. But again, the production is, the volume is going to be lower, right?
Lower.
And if you want to do that, if you're not an extroverted person and it works for you, by all means. But I really, really believe it's a skill that if you want to pursue in sales, if you want to get good at sales, you need to perfect. Because if the goal is to ultimately become an account executive or a VP of sales, you're not going to get away with just typing words on the screen.
No, you're not.
You're not.
You're not. Right? So Dan, just to put a cap on it. So
yeah,
the average doing 100 on a daily basis, how many dials were you doing?
Oof, I think anywhere from 200 to 400.
200 to 400.
Yeah, 200 on the low end, right? I mean,
I used to always see you in threes.
Yeah, yeah. So that would probably be very
300s.
300s.
Yeah.
Everybody's just clear to everyone.
Yes. So that was definitely very consistent. And here's the thing: we also have great technology now, right? So we have front spin. I mean, that's pretty damn fast, right? You can automate it. You can build a perfect sequence and then just let it run. I mean, there's no reason why you can't hit that. I mean, if you just sit in front of your screen for an hour, like you should be able to do that.
And dang, so
But why don't more people do it? Sorry, real quick. Dan, why don't more people do it?
I think people are really afraid of rejection. I think you got to get over that ASAP.
It's the rejection thing.
I think rejection people hate. You know, it's it stings, but it's just, dude, you got to get over it.
They'll do crazy things.
Yeah.
They'll dummy dial.
Oh my gosh.
They'll build zombie lists.
Yeah.
They'll just do anything to avoid the rejection.
Yeah.
But when you just take the same energy, you just put it into focusing on doing it.
Yeah, yeah. That shouldn't even matter. You're talking. It's a voice that's popping up from the screen. Why are you getting offended? It's okay.
I don't know why.
People.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Right.
Sorry, Chris. What were you going to say?
Well, so you know, minimum of 30, September 21st, 47. Of those leads, how many of them were via call?
All of them. All of them. 100%.
100%.
Every single lead.
100%.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I definitely tried. I've tried LinkedIn. I've tried emailing. Don't get it twisted. I did give it my fair shot, but it just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that I can definitely articulate myself more fluidly and more efficiently over the phone, you know, using my voice. It's just faster too. Right. Faster. So
let's talk about, so that's the work ethic is one piece. Like, well, actually, the first piece is just this coming to agreement, to a realization of that there's a rejection on the phone. Nothing more, nothing less. It is what it is.
Right.
Right. It's like opening up a window or closing the window. It's just part of the job. And then you've determined for me to get to this, I need to make this many dials. But you would have to get skilled on the phone, right? You probably got better on the phone, talking to people, engaging in this manner.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that. Like, what did you improve? What are some things that you learned that you had to do that you improved on when you're in that interaction on the phone from a phone technique standpoint?
Yeah, from a technique perspective, great, great point. So I think the academy training that we have is really good, at least in setting the framework of a beginning and an end. Mm-hmm. Although when I started getting more and more into cold calling as a whole, I realized that the way that prospects would react to, you know, the many open-ended questions we would throw at them in the beginning, they weren't too fond of that. So I would reveal myself and my intentions in the very beginning of the call. I would tell them exactly why I was reaching out. I wanted to call you to actually schedule a better time for us to demonstrate our capabilities, to hear your thoughts on if there's any relevance. I would say that, yep. Right? So cutting straight to the point. And these people, right, they're getting cold called nonstop, barrage, bombarded, left and right. And some feels more than others, right? But the point is, you don't want to waste their time, right? You're not going to do the full demonstration there.
Right.
So you reveal yourself, and that already gives you some degree of authenticity because they're like, oh, this guy isn't trying to scam me, right? Yeah. He's revealing everything. He's showing his cards,
yeah,
right? So that piece of psychology there for the listeners out there who are cold calling, I really highly recommend. I say be honest.
Yep.
And ask, obviously, you still have to qualify the prospect. Make sure that you get the desired pieces of questions and answers for your prospect or for your client. Everything they want to know at the end of the call, right? So make sure you address that. You don't want to just QuickBook people either. But the more and more skilled you become, especially with each individual campaign, you better understand, okay, this person, especially, okay, I'm talking to the CISO. My client's going to be happy to talk to the CISO, right? So some conversations don't have to be as long versus a security engineer who has less of a decision-making process. You might want to ask them a little bit more, how involved are you really in identity access management? Ask them a little bit more about your environment. But this is up to you. You have to be able to understand not only the hierarchy of the type of people you're talking about, the decision-making capabilities, but also, you know, if it's a very specific campaign and they only address a particular niche, you have to be able to address that as well. So this is up to you. You have to do your own research on your client. But there's so many factors in here, right? But to put a cap on it, you have to be able to negotiate and navigate accordingly on your own time and realize this.
So Dang, when you're in the 40s, that's roughly two a day.
So,
and how many conversations? Like when you get on someone on the phone, you're what percentage are you like, yeah, this is gonna be a lead?
I would say that if they hang on the phone for longer than 2 minutes and, they're asking questions, that's usually a book. I would say percentage-wise, out of every 10 conversations, probably 3 or 4 would convert into meetings. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've heard you on the phone.
Yeah.
You don't back down from objections.
No, I don't. And here's the thing. It's a little bit different from like a closing role, right? So say you're the face of this particular account. You don't necessarily want to, completely piss off the prospect or that account entirely, right? You don't want to be blacklisted, right? So there's a fine line. You have to be able to realize when you're stepping over.
Right.
Right. But it does not hurt to be challenging. Exactly. That's the word, right?
I think you kind of like it.
I love it. I think this is a sport. I mean, this is modern hunting. I mean, it really allows you to really feel that thrill and that dopamine and that satisfaction when you've earned the trust. I mean, that's the goal. It's earning the trust of this person who you're cold calling. All they hear is a voice, and you can even break the fourth wall and say, listen, I know this is a cold call, man. You get lots of these every day. I get it. Let me be a little bit more interesting than the guy before me.
Yeah.
Right. So when you enter that sort of state of mind and you're having a real conversation, when you break the fourth wall there, it's great. They realize, okay, this is a human being. This is not somebody who's just reading off a sheet of paper, right? So
it's not ChatGPT.
It's not, exactly. You can set yourself apart. This is, again, going back to the point, everything's getting automated. People are getting tired of this sort of stuff. You have to be able to sound like a human.
And that's the key.
Yeah.
Your real competition at that point are the other people that are calling them to get their time.
Exactly.
If you can sound different, but also bring some value.
Yep.
And I think why some people, this is what we have to try and get people to do, the reason why they won't make the dials is the same reason why they don't know how to handle the objections. Even if they've been trained, they're scared of the rejection. Like, even the way you said it, like, you're like, dang, you don't have any problem with the rejections. Like, a lot of people, or the objections, like a lot of people, like, they don't like the objections. Like, oh, they're telling me no, and they just got to get the psyche in shape in their brain. So you're like, no, let's go. This is fine. All right. Now the party has started.
Right.
The dance has just begun, right?
I think, dang, you really like the challenging piece of
it. It's the mindset.
The challenge of the prospect.
And here's the thing. I don't want to reduce the angst and suffering of, other people who find it hard to cold call, right? I understand. But really, think about how lucky we are. I mean, we're in such a field where we're interacting with super intelligent people. You get a chance to practice and hone this particular skill, right? I mean, there's worse things in life than getting rejected over the phone. I mean, come on, right? And it's up to you. I mean, this is more of a lifestyle thing, but you got to discipline yourself in other ways outside of sales too. I mean, you hit the gym,
yeah,
right? Just don't you know, eat that donut, right? You just, you have to be able to kind of, you know, restrict yourself and be disciplined, and it bleeds into everything you do.
Completely. Yeah. Dang, do you remember anyone who's rejected you?
Oh my God, countless times. There are people who have rejected me. I've called them multiple times, right? And I was able to finally book them after like 7 calls, right? They told me to fuck off and call them back in a year, and I did, and I got a meeting with that person. So of course.
Sir, you told me to fuck off last year.
Yeah.
But to call back?
Yeah.
I'm making the phone call now.
Yeah, exactly. And they remembered me, right? So it's just, it's...
So Dave, yeah. It's funny you talk about art and you talk about discipline.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people don't associate those two together,
mm-hmm.
right? But mm-hmm. but it's funny, if you're disciplined, you can be, I've heard this and read this, you can be more creative when you're disciplined.
Oh my God, yeah, totally.
The discipline gives you the ability to be more creative because if you're making mistakes, you're not getting stuff done. The discipline is like you come back at it.
Yeah.
I think all these great musicians or artists, they're incredibly disciplined people, right? And they're disciplined as it came to their dedication to their craft or their art.
Mm-hmm.
And in sales, it's a skill, but there's a lot of art to it too. But you have to be disciplined to it. You have to be dedicated to it.
You have to be.
You're dedicated to the role and then figuring out the art of it through discipline.
Yep. Yep. I mean, the discipline is everything, right? I mean, it's just, if you give up, it's over. Then here's another really cool thing about what we do is that you get to literally interact with some of the smartest people ever. And you don't need necessarily a fully fledged STEM degree to do this. You can learn everything in this job.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Everything. I mean, you've got all the resources, right? And you're hearing these occurred meetings. You hear how the sales engineers talk about the product. That's the education you need. It's right there.
Talking about prospects.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking to an SDR this morning, and he was talking about how he, 4 months into the job as an mm-hmm. SDR, his client, who has a law degree from Harvard,
mm-hmm.
was fascinated with what he was doing and what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty cool.
It's very cool.
He's an AE now.
Yeah.
But when he was an SDR, the head of sales was more interested in what he was doing. I mean, mm-hmm. you talked with this person about that,
mm-hmm.
and what did they say?
Right.
Right. And tell me more. Right. And it was just eye opening to mm-hmm. the former attorney, the Harvard Law educated
person, right.
about what was going on in those sales conversations.
Right.
So it's very interesting.
So Dave, in addition to just being a monster on the phone and just putting up huge numbers, you also introduced some folks in and brought some people into the business. So talk a little bit about the folks that you persuaded to follow you into Memory Blue.
Right. So going back to the conversation about how I had a lot to prove, right? Yeah. So once I started seeing success, once I started making some real money, you know, my friends were seeing this and they were like, you know what? Oh, tech sales isn't so bad after all, right? So I definitely taught a lot about the business to some of my closest friends, Louis Huber, Zach Mosader, Rio Osborne, who I went to high school with. Okay. These gentlemen all came to Memory Blue. Also Jacob Goldblatt, who I visited in New Orleans a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, so these gentlemen, they're all very, very smart. They know how to talk to people. And they were all in unique positions where, you know, I don't want to say they weren't exactly pleased with where they were, but I knew that if they were, you know, if they gave a shot in the field that we're in, they would really enjoy it. And lo and behold, all of them now are pursuing tech sales and they're all in fully fledged careers now because
that's
of that.
Great.
So it's amazing.
Yes.
It's really amazing. So I'm very happy I was able to spread the gospel to good effect here. So
also,
yeah,
Corcoran, internally, I mean, I would talk to people internal who would join the PPM team who were just motivated and inspired by what was going on in that group.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like the true hustlers. Bianca.
Yeah, Bianca Barris. Shout out Bianca. Yep.
Bianca was talking about it in her session with us.
Yeah.
Of how the true hustlers. And Dang and I were talking about it last night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would roll with that crew.
Yeah.
I rolled most of, you know, lots of Memory Blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I would roll with that in the history of the business. That crew of folks.
Mm-hmm.
In tech sales,
it's like the SEALs versus the
in the entire country,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, what's our guy's name down in
Dickie?
Dickie, right?
Dickie Capros, brilliant guy. These guys are—they're really smart. They're like, really smart.
Well, just that moment in time.
Yep.
No one. We'll wipe you out, man. What do you want to do? Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
As I get on phone with clients and they talk to me about what they think are the best SDR teams they've ever seen, I'm like, you don't have any clue, brother.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways,
so dang, all told, you were an SDR, SDE
with us,
3.5 years.
That's right.
Right. We see a lot of these SDRs. They think they've had enough after 8-9 months.
Mm-hmm.
I know it all.
What would be your response to that?
I think that I would say that they're wrong. I think there's so wrong. I mean, I'm still learning today.
Yeah.
And it also depends on how deeply ingratiated you want to get in your particular campaign or field, whatever you're selling. The art itself, I mean, it's psychology, it's philosophy, it's all of these things combined. It's theater, you know, thrown into it. Acting. You
sound like Bill Walton.
It's true. It's true. It's all of those things combined, right? And then you have the end goal of persuasion, right? Yeah. So it's constant. There's so much knowledge to be had about this craft. I mean, I would say they're wrong. There's so much more to learn.
Yeah. Well, I would say, have they gotten 47 leads?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
or even 30,
or even 20,
or even 20,
or even 20.
Look, I mean, it still depends on what you want to do, right? Not everybody enjoys it to the same degree that, you know, the hustlers of the PPM team do. But again, I think it's just valuable. If you want to do well in sales, you have to at least be confident that your cold calling skills are top notch.
Of course. We just ended up a podcast session with a gentleman who left the company seven, eight years ago. We introduced him to you. Mm-hmm. You're going to go to coffee with him?
Yeah.
He ended the podcast, and we did even set this up with some quota hitting, enterprise selling, land and expanding, classic emerging technology software rep, who said, don't think for a second that those SDR skills are valuable.
Mm-hmm.
They're put to good use.
Oh my God.
I've never been in a QBR where the AE has said, I don't have this many meetings this quarter because my SDR didn't get me any. He says, those don't end well.
Right. Right.
Because the strong AEs are still doing that for themselves while they're working deals.
Right.
And the good ones view anything they get from their SDRs as icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
So it never stops.
Being
really good at that role is the difference between you being a quota hitting, tops going, club tripping AE, or me looking at your LinkedIn and you being on your fourth job in 5 years.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
What do you want from your career, in your life?
Yeah.
Learn how to discover, or do you want to discover, or do you want to like just wait it out and think at 8 months you know what the heck you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
So, dang, talk to us a little bit about what you're doing now.
Yeah, yeah. So, I work at a company called Ramp Corporate Cards Expense Management. Here's the 30-second, right? Yeah. So, you know, basically think of us as basically a modern corporate credit card that's taken everything from accounts payable, bill pay, receipt capture, reconciliation, reimbursement, consolidated all of those things. Right, all of those disjointed, you know, vendors, and put it all in association with the card itself, also with 1.5% cash back. Now, the beauty is, you know, your controllers, your administrators, you know, your accountants, they're not wasting their time, you know, on month end trying to consolidate all these reports. It's fully automated. And the best part is it's entirely free. The whole platform is free if you use the card.
Okay.
So we just closed Twitter, Shopify this year.
Wow.
So we're LinkedIn top 5 fastest growing startups in the US. So definitely a rocket ship, very proud to say. And I will say myself and Dan Green was on the PPM team with me. He and I, we actually gave the entire outbound department a cold calling training, because before Dan joined, everybody was only emailing, only using LinkedIn to try to secure meetings. And it was great. It was working. But then Dan, right, from all the cold calling from Emery Blue, came in and was able to crush it, absolutely. And I wanted to apply to the business. And then I also was able to take my cold calling skills as well. So we both partnered together, gave a great training, and now the entire department is cold calling. This all happened last month, right, together when I joined in April.
I mean, these come in and they normally have a ramp, and you said, I don't really need the ramp. Thank you very much.
Yeah. No, so there was actually a 2-month ramp period where they would put you on the full OTE. I said, no, put me on quota this month. I want to start making money. And I crushed it. So I came in number two at volume of meetings, number two in pipeline sourced in my first month.
Out of how many?
Out of, I think, 70 SDRs. So yeah. So my point being that you would be surprised at how many companies that are really in the top tier right now that aren't leveraging cold calling and who don't take it seriously enough and who don't realize the potential.
Yeah.
So it's kind of scary, really. I don't want this art to die, but there's also a lot of potential, right? So we have to perpetuate this. It's our duty in this sense. So
Dang.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself going?
Yeah.
Career.
So I definitely want to become an account executive. I want to, learn a lot about how to close properly. I mean, it's a different, appreciation of sales in the sense that it's a longer process generally, right? Mm-hmm. You're honing. It's not get in, get out, right? So you have to build a long relationship, and it's a lot more organization than simply putting a lead into Salesforce as well, right? So a lot of TLC, and it's a different art entirely itself, but not to say, again, the point being the cold calling aspects bleeds into it because you still have to be sociable. You still have to be charismatic and persuasive. So it's all the same in that sense, but definitely want to do that. Probably eventually found my own business, partner with some smart coders, developers.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens in the next decade.
I can't wait.
Though. Yeah.
Stay in touch.
Absolutely.
Right. Because Chris and I are big fans of yours.
Likewise.
And your brethren.
Yes.
From that team, but certainly of yours personally. It's why we said, oh, you got to get Dang on this thing. Right. I mean, you left the company very recently.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm incredibly honored to be here.
Yeah. So. And Dang, another part is let's talk about work from home versus work from wherever, because you were a work from wherever person.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And it didn't matter at all.
No.
Because you produced.
Yes. So my thoughts on that is this. I think that it was a good idea to go in the office in the beginning to really, meet the folks, get the hands on, because it's tough to Slack somebody in, have them, help you right away versus just tapping them on the shoulder, right? Yeah. So I can definitely appreciate the beauty of getting assistance, at least in the beginning.
Yep.
Obviously, I love the camaraderie as well in a good office environment. Of course, that goes without saying. But at a certain point where your existential needs come into play, right? Say you want to live in New York, right? So I've always wanted to, for example, right?
Hypothetically.
Yeah, hypothetically. So say you want to move somewhere cool and really, taste the culture, but you still want to do a great job at your job. You have to be able to not only prove to yourself, but also prove to your boss that, you can do your job wherever. So there should be a proving ground. And I think that once that's, fully garnered, you should be able to, do your job wherever, where there's a good Wi-Fi connection, really.
But so where did you work? Where have you worked?
Oh my God. So many places. I mean, so when the whole COVID thing happened, worked in DC for a while. I would work at my buddy's lake house in Maryland. I went to South Carolina, Pauly's Beach, New Orleans, obviously New York, Mexico. I even did some dials there, California, Colorado, all over the country.
You wonder why he has so much freedom?
What's that?
The results.
Because he's so disciplined.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's put in the $300. Where are you working today from today? Mexico. How many dials? 304.
Yeah.
That's where you get the freedom from the discipline.
Yep.
Right. So, I mean, that boils down to the trust, right? I mean, there's a lot of, this kind of, we're entering a phase where a lot of companies are trying to pull their employees back in. Yeah. I know my buddy Max, I think Capital One is doing a mandatory on-site for everybody now. So some people are not fans of that. I think it's a process of weeding certain people out of the business as well. Separate conversation. But I think it depends. It depends on your relationship with your job, depends on your relationship with your manager, but primarily depends on your motivation for your work. And if that waiver is contingent on where you are, it's a separate conversation. But if it doesn't, you should be able to do it wherever, I think. But you have to be able to prove that.
But you certainly did.
Yeah. So
you certainly did.
Well, I think people like you, as you progress in your career, you'll probably always be afforded that freedom once you prove to
precisely
where you are. So for some people, it's not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
But for others, they're going to be back in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about me hating on Memory Blue people because I'm big into that.
It's right.
Because people are early in their career.
Of course.
You were in SDR for 3.5 years.
Yes.
Like, I even earlier, I was like, they want to go to New York. Sure.
Yeah.
I wasn't even in. Took a millisecond.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember writing that email because I pitched it to Max Hart, and he was just like, if Mark and Chris sign off on it, be my guest. And so I drafted it and I sent it over. Oh, yeah, because we took a 3K vacation, me Jamacy, Andrew Jamacy, and Buddy. We went to Florida, right? All of us pooled our $3,000.
I've seen pictures.
Yeah, it was a great, that was a great grand time. And we were still working, right? But that's when we realized, hey, we can do this. Like, it's doable. So
awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess, what pearls of wisdom would you give to the SDR who is in their first month? What would you tell that person?
Okay. I would say that learn to be able to talk about your product conversationally without a script. I mean, I'm getting a little specific.
Yeah.
Double down on the cold calling. You have to be able to just be able to talk about it. Read a lot, because this helps you instantiate, you know, good vernacular, how to structure a sentence without losing your thought. And practice something outside of work that you can really channel your creative outlet into, right? Anything that requires a degree of improvisation will bleed into your improvisational skills on the phone as well. But I would say watch Mad Men. I think Mad Men was a great inspiration for me on theatrical writing. I think that they do a fantastic job. It kind of feels like a play, right? And the one-liners and et cetera. And you can have fun with it. You should have fun with it. This is not, it's not a chore. This is not a chore, right? I mean, people view this it's like pulling teeth, right? It's not. You should be able to appreciate it. It's an art at the end of it. So
modern day hunting.
That's right.
I love it.
Yeah.
Very good.
Dang.
Yeah. Dang.
We'll do this again.
We will do this again.
Appreciate it, gentlemen. Yeah. Thank you so much for the time today.
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I can't wait to see where you go.
Appreciate
it. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yes, likewise.
If your sales team struggles to hit quota or generate qualified leads, Memory Blue's Academy Prospecting Principles Training Program is the solution. Great sales training is time intensive and requires continuous guidance from sales experts. In this 6-week course, our world-class facilitators use a hands-on learning approach to turn raw talent into industry-leading salespeople. From building targeted outreach lists to strategically overcoming objections, the key prospecting skills taught here create the foundation for strong sales performance. Our proven training cuts SDR ramp time in half and increases quota attainment by 89%. New cohorts launch twice per month. Head to memoryblue.com/academy to see upcoming dates and secure your seat today.
Thanks for listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Please subscribe and leave a 5-star review after the beep.